we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello. And welcome to the News Quiz, and indeed welcome to 2017, which we hope will be every inch the non-stop festival of fun that 2016 was. We start with something from an article about Van Gogh in The Guardian, read by Caroline Nichols.
Van Gogh was bleeding copiously after slashing his ear with a razor, so he wrapped the piece of ear in paper and walked to his favourite brothel, where he gave it to a young woman he knew.
Thanks to Mark Hopcroft from Malvern for keeping us up to date with that. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Angela Barnes. And opposite them, on my left, Danny Finkelstein and Andy Parsons. So, Jeremy, who's resigned to our fate?
Sir Ivan Rogers, who was our ambassador to the EU. There's quite a lot to get through here, and it is quite dry, so let's crack on. Basically, he led our negotiation. He's loathed by Brexiteers. He's a predatory Europhile, and he's hated. And the hatred started when he led our renegotiation of our membership of the EU with Cameron. And he was warned by Ivan Rogers that it wouldn't go well. European leaders are not going to just give us what we want. He keeps giving this advice to ministers, and this has made him very unpopular. He's denounced by Brexiteers as being a gloomy pessimist. But, you know, I thought the referendum was supposed to be about more than the bottom line, about more than trade and money, and I thought it was about who we are. And who we are is gloomy pessimists. That's our national characteristics. What defines us is a defiant and chipper resignation about the absolute crapness of life. And no Brussels bureaucrat should ever take that away from me, nor any perky Atlanticist. Anyways, it's got to the point that Sir Ivan Rogers is so upset with being ignored and clearly upset that civil services advice is not being taken that he has resigned. And his resignation letter was part saying, look, I'm leaving because my predecessor needs time to get into the post. But also there was a parting shot where he criticised ministers for not listening to civil servants and he championed civil servants. And I tend to feel quite sorry for civil servants because they are the people who basically run the country while ministers fanny around saying, look at me, I'm important, trying to make up for the love they didn't receive when they were backbenchers. And so he's really upset a lot of people on the Brexit wing of the Tory party, including Peter Lilly, who condemned the resignation letter, and also Irritable Duncan Syndrome pitched in. But the new man is as another sir, but they're very pleased. Davis and Johnson are very pleased about the new Barrow man, just in that way that you would be when you've got absolutely no idea what you're doing and somebody turns up. It's like when British Gas arrive, they might not stop water pouring through the ceiling, but, you know, they take two sugars, so there's a stronger chance that they'll be able to fix it than you will. So we've now got this new sir in charge, and all sorts of people have chipped in. Farage! Nigel Farage. You have to feel sorry for Paul Nuttall because no one cares what he thinks. And he must ring the BBC saying, hello, it's Paul Nuttall here. I'm the new leader of UKIP. And, you know, if you ever want any of my opinions on anything, they say, oh, look, is your dad there? Yeah, OK. Nigel, I want to speak to you.
He wanted the job, didn't he, Farage?
Oh, yeah, he thought they would send him because you would do that, wouldn't you, in a diplomatic role.
But he thought that about everything. It's like he really doesn't know what to do with himself now, does he? He sort of turned up in America, decided he'd start doing a job there no one asked him to do. He's like the bloke who cleans your windscreen at traffic lights.
And will you personally miss Ivan Rogers, Andy?
Well, his job was, and he said that there was going to be... said it might take 10 years for us to negotiate Brexit. And nobody liked this, did they? David Davis going, well, he said, we'll be able to do it. He said, as long as we're nimble, we should be able to do it in 2 years. And you're thinking, well, if there was a word that you were going to use to describe Boris Johnson, nimble would not be it. We all saw what happened when he was playing rugby, what happened to that small Japanese kid. If Boris Johnson was in a China shop, the bull would be found innocent.
Yeah. where does this leave us all, then?
Well, I was quite amused that he was called permanent representative. You don't know, not that permanent. It didn't yeah. I don't think actually being in the news that turned out to be that permanent. But it was a bit confusing, that story, because basically, as far as I can see, he said he couldn't remain because he's worried about us leaving. And then people who want to leave don't want him to remain because they're worried that if he remains, we won't leave. But now that he has left, the problem of leaving remains. So
I'm not sure why people are surprised. He's basically is the bloke who's decided to sell his ticket to the Titanic, isn't it? It's not because he says in his resignation letter he's pointed to the fact that the government don't really know what they're doing over Brexit. You know, that we're wandering into this Brexit like we're wandering into the back of a wardrobe, and at the moment we don't know if it's Narnia or just a stack of old pornos. That's, I mean, either way, Boris Johnson's happy, but we don't know.
I suppose the idea is that, you know, he's an expert, isn't it? It's almost like he's a builder, and the government is saying...
Had enough of the experts, Miles, haven't we? We've had enough.
Yes. That's a wall. You just need to take the wall down. And he's saying, well, I don't want to take the wall down. It's a structural wall. But they're saying, no, well, we want you to take the wall down. The people have spoken. Take down the wall. We need to put an RSJ. And, yeah, the people have had enough of RSJs or whatever it is.
It's not going that well for Theresa May, is it? I think she's finally realised that maybe it wasn't such a good idea. She's had this long strategy. She, you know, her school friend said, oh, she always wanted to be prime minister, and she's played a game. We're making sure she's got no enemies in the party. Everybody kind of likes her. She's kind of liked on both wings of the Tory party. She wasn't really clear what she thought about Brexit. She played it very carefully so that she would become leader, and now she's leader. And you look at her and you think, you've realised that none of it was really worth it, haven't you, really, Theresa? It's a bit like when you get your kitchen done and the builders leave and you look around and you realise your problem never really was the kitchen.
Indistinguishably, this is the news that Sir Ivan Rogers is to resign as Britain's permanent representative to the European Union. What I want to know is what kind of man resigns the day after coming back from Christmas break? You've had 2 weeks off, Ivan. Get your face out of the panettone. Go back to sodding work. Sir Ivan was expected to carry on in his current role until October, but felt that a better way to prepare for Brexit was to spend the next 9 months stockpiling tinned food and dragging mattresses into a cellar. Sir Ivan left with a note to his staff, which is rather uncommon when leaving a role. I'd much rather he be frog-marched out by security as he kicks and struggles, calling Karen from HR a snide bitch who's wanted this from day one. 2 points to Jeremy. Angela, whose prices are off the rails?
So, this is the story that train fares have risen by an average of 2.3% in the UK, and we now pay on average 6 times more for our season tickets for our rail fare than our European peers. So, for example, if you're a season ticket holder in Luton, say commuting to London, you pay an average of £387 a month, whereas for the equivalent distance in Paris, they pay £61 a month, and they don't have to live in Luton. To go to Glasgow before Christmas, right? It's true. And I was a last minute replacement for someone at a show in Glasgow, and it cost me £250 to get to Glasgow and back, right? You double that if you buy a sandwich, right? It cost Tim Peake less to go to work than it cost me.
It's funny you should say that, Angela, because I had to go to Glasgow and I looked, and the standard off peak to Glasgow was £134 by train. And if you can fly to Barcelona for £40. If you've got a meeting in Glasgow, it shouldn't be cheaper to fly yourself out to Barcelona and then fly from Barcelona to Glasgow. But possibly even better than that, if you've got a meeting in Glasgow, right, actually just fly yourself out to Barcelona for £40. Whoever you're meeting in Glasgow, fly them out to Barcelona.
My brother went to a conference in Glasgow and went back with somebody from the conference. On the way back, the train inspector came and asked the guy for his ticket. He searched, he couldn't find it anywhere. Train inspector decided to let him off. He arrived home, told his wife that he'd had this terrible journey, come back on the train from Glasgow, hadn't had his ticket, and his wife said, "That's great, but what did you do with our car?"
What's happening with the trains, don't you? I mean, Theresa May, the one thing that she has approved, isn't she? 50 million for High Speed Rail Link 2 so as we can get from Birmingham to London 20 minutes quicker. And I have absolutely no confidence that we won't actually get to London 20 minutes quicker, but be kept just outside of London for 20 minutes waiting for a platform to become available. And then just as you start going, due to some signalling problems, you see the slow train from Birmingham chugging past you.
Surely the thing to do if you want to speed up your journey by 20 minutes is just walk to the front of the train before it arrives. The reasons why it is so much cheaper to travel in Germany, Holland or France is that Germany, Holland and France own our railways and benefit from all the subsidies that they get. Because we have got nationalised railways, it's just not our nation that owns them.
Southern Rail, it's so bad at the moment, isn't it? It's been going on for so long that actually if people who use Southern Rail hear that there's a bus replacement service, they cheer.
It's ridiculous. Michael Payne has just pitched a series like London to Brighton in 80 days. That's
the reason for the Southern Rail strike, though, isn't it? It's because basically they're trying to decide who opens the doors. Is it going to be the guards or is it going to be the driver? This is what the dispute is about. The train company saying they don't want the guards to do it because it means extra training. But often when the train arrives, doesn't it, the train stops. Right, there's some beeping noises, you press the button, the door opens, you get on, you then press the button, the door closes. Now, I've had no training. But I think I'm pretty good at that.
Have you ever tried pressing the button when the train's not at a station, though, Andy?
I haven't, no.
Because that, I mean, they're the ones that have unlocked the doors to make that possible for you. I'm not saying that what you're saying doesn't stand up to scrutiny, but there is an element of safety involved. There is. So someone has to unlock the door for you to get the little sort of go when you get a little bit of a power rush when you're the person in charge of opening the train.
I take that point, but what they're saying is, they're saying that the guards, they want to make them now onboard supervisors and they don't do the doors, right? But you're thinking, surely the doors are on board. You know, surely that should be part of their supervision. Are they saying that if somebody actually gets stuck, you know, in the door, the onboard supervisor will be looking at that going, nothing to do with me. Most of them is outside. Yeah.
The problem is that those of us who are zealous about renationalisation do somewhat sentimentalise nationalised railways, and, you know, our memories are somewhat rose-tinted now. We tend to think of British Rail as a golden age of steam. And Bernard Cribbins is doing the signals. And standing on the track is Jenny Agata. And she's naked with an Aborigine.
I think you might have been watching quite a short reel of her work there. sort of collage thing. Does anyone know what held up a train from London to Edinburgh this week?
Jesse James.
It was not, it the bloke who was trying to find his car in Glasgow and got on the wrong train?
It was a scorpion. A scorpion escaped on a train from London to Edinburgh, and the train had to be held up at Peterborough while the scorpion was removed.
I thought you meant like a giant scorpion on the track. I was quite excited then for a minute.
Sort of Jason and the Argonauts.
I thought you meant someone who was born in November. Right.
Importunately, this is the news that rail passengers across the country have been hit by New Year price hikes as part of the rail industry's ongoing commitment to find the fastest way of getting things from A to B, where A is your bank account and B is the pockets of the chief executive of Abellio. We apparently pay on average 6 times as much as rail passengers in Europe, although they don't have the privilege of regularly pausing for upwards of 3/4 of an hour just outside Peterborough while the man across the aisle is noisily sick into a Sainsbury's bag for life. Southern Rail have recently been out on strike again, meaning no trains were running from London to Brighton, a state of affairs largely indistinguishable from their normal operations, except that passengers were spared the misery of hope. Also this week, a Virgin East Coast train from London to Edinburgh had to be halted after a scorpion escaped on board. A Virgin spokesman said that while the scorpion had been wandering down the train, there were plenty of free seats it could have taken, and there wasn't any need... to sit outside the toilets grumpily making a video. 2 points to Angela. Danny, who's been accused of bad language?
Well, this is a report that Chukaramuna has put out suggesting that immigrants who come to Britain either before they get here or when they arrive here should be able to speak English. or they should learn English when they arrive here. And the report also suggested, which I didn't understand quite so well, that people should be allocated to different regions of the country. Now, I'm Jewish and both my parents are refugees to Britain. I'm not quite sure how it would work to be there. Congratulations, you've arrived in the country, but you've been allocated to Wrexham, and now you have to walk to synagogue from there.
I think it's a very good idea that people should learn the language if they come here. I mean, I love this country, and the reason I love this country is because all my friends are here, all my family are here, and I can't speak any other language. If you can't speak the language, you're always going to be, you know, an outsider. And in the same way that the British expats in Spain are very much outsiders, aren't they? Because there was all the talk for Vote Leave, wasn't there, of all the criminals coming into Britain. But obviously we've got quite a lot of British criminals over on the Costa del Sol. And now that we've voted Leave, it seems likely that a lot of those will be coming back to Britain. It would have been quite a powerful campaign slogan, wouldn't it? Vote Remain, keep British criminals in Spain.
The reason that our expats in Spain don't learn the language is no one likes the grass. Yeah, people should learn the language when they get here, but then people should do lots of it. It doesn't need to be the law, does it? I mean, it's polite if you're in another country to at least try, even if you're on holiday, to say adios or Achtung or Banzai, you know, say one of those foreign things, they seem to like it. But, you know, it's polite. And if you arrive in a country, as Danny's parents did, you know, eventually you learn the language. Yeah, you should make the effort. You don't need to make it the law. I mean, it's like, I don't think people should hold their knives like a pen, but I don't think they should be arrested for it.
Yeah, I think it's partly about the language that it's sort of couched, isn't it? I mean, some newspapers had headlines, migrants being forced to learn English, but you could just say migrants are being given English lessons, which is a slightly sort of more positive spin on it, isn't it? But I mean, you know, that is better, I'd have thought, than refusing to give people English lessons. I mean, at least sort of allowing them to integrate in some way.
I arrived in this country July 17th, 1961, in a maternity hospital in Hampshire. Couldn't speak a word of English. I'd never paid in. I got a roof over my head. I got child benefit. It's not right, I'm telling you.
That Casey report that came out about integration, and one of them was that people should learn the language, wasn't it? And the other one was that we needed kids to mix at an early age. That was the best way to get integration in British society. But now we've got this idea of these religious state schools, haven't we? 100% religiously selective. And you're thinking, that's not going to... It's madness, isn't it? There's going to be no integration whatsoever. Apparently, they're only going to work if people who are not from that religion would, if there was space, send their kid to it. They'd be able to send... You think, how is that possibly going to work as a test? I mean, just in the example, if you were part of the Jedi religion, you'd be unlikely to say you were very happy for your kid to go to a school that was 100% Sith.
See, it's a very real fear for a lot of households, I think. But I think, in a way, like at a university, you sort of turn up to a seminar and you haven't sort of done any of the work, and if you can sort of muddle through for 2 hours, you think, I could do this for 4 years, really. I mean, I would love to speak less, to be honest, not have to spend my life sort of desperately explaining myself and appealing for calm.
There was, as Danny said, there was basically part of the report was talking about quotas and about saying that where there should be more immigration, some SNP MPs wanted more immigration in their areas. Various MPs were saying they wanted to reduce the number of immigration. So the idea was that you picked different parts of the country, had different rules for that.
The Canadian system.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're thinking, well, actually, those people who have actually, it turned out, have got the least immigration were often the ones who are most against immigration, whereas those parts of the country which actually had more immigrants seemed to be more okay with it. You know, I grew up in Cornwall, and there we regarded anybody from Devon as an immigrant. We had one bloke across the road who was known as the Traveller, because he'd once been up to London by train.
In Cornwall, whenever you go there, people in Cornwall say, oh, a lot of artists come here for the light, and you have to break it to them, no, they have light other places on. I went to Plymouth one time, I couldn't see a bloody thing.
It's funny, different countries do have different attitudes to how they sort of assimilate people into it. Like, there's a project I read about in Berlin where they train immigrants to be museum guides, and I think that's a lovely thing. Yeah, we should definitely do that here, because most of the stuff in the British Museum does belong to them.
Conspicuously, this is a report on immigration delivered by Parliament's all-party group on social integration, and it really is all-party. The study says the group believes that all immigrants should be expected to have either learned English or be enrolled in compulsory English classes upon arrival. A bit unfair of them, having to start their new life in a new country by having to write an essay about the role of the third-person narrator in Tess of the D'Urbervilles. The report suggests that Britain adopts a Canadian system, where presumably an area the size of the Midlands will be forced to speak French. Under the Canadian system, local authorities would set their own targets for migrants. If different regions do decide how many visas to give out, we should announce them like football results. Cumbria, 47. Kent, -2. 2 points to Danny. Andy, who's not Russian to listen to the intelligence?
This is Donald Trump still saying, you know, his security services saying that the Russians hacked during the election campaign, and him saying he believes Assange more, who's saying that it wasn't the Russians. And, you know, Donald Trump, he said in 2010, didn't he, when it came to WikiLeaks, now he's sort of agreeing with Julian Assange, when it came to 2010, he basically said that people like Assange and WikiLeaks, they should be liable to the death penalty, anybody who sort of let out American secrets. Donald Trump has basically contradicted himself everything he's ever said.
Oh, I'm so bored of having to talk about Trump. It's like people say, oh, Trump's a gift to comedians. He isn't, because he's done all the jokes himself. He's a gift in as much as he's given you a box of chocolates, but he's eaten them all. And I don't know what he's going to do, because you just have to look at what he's doing, the teams he's building up around him. What's he going to do? You know, he's got a defence secretary. He's in line to be a defence secretary. It's a man called General Mad Dog Matus. Now, I haven't checked, but I'm pretty sure that's not his Native American name. And
I've been reading with great fascination Donald Trump's statements on intelligence. He says he's a great fan of intelligence, and I thought, well, I don't think the feeling's mutual.
It should be no surprise to the Americans that the Russians were trying to hack them, is it? I mean, let's face it, the Americans themselves were bugging for 10 years Angela Merkel's phone. And she actually phoned up, didn't she, Barack Obama, to complain. And you think, well, what was the point of that? Yeah. Presumably, he already knew she was unhappy and was expecting her call.
Well, I basically really hope the Russians are reading my emails, because that means someone is.
Well, they can hack absolutely anything now, can't they? Now we've got this Internet of Things, worried about them hacking our kettles or whatever. you turn up home, you know, the kettle's boiling, the coffee maker's all over the floor, the fridge is open and the heating's knackered, and, you know, you're there thinking you've had some burglar or something. It's just some 12-year-old in Macedonia who's been having a right laugh.
Vivaciously, this is the news that President-elect and friend of the show, Donald Trump, has criticised US intelligence services who have alleged Russian interference in the presidential election. Trump doesn't trust the CIA, and quite frankly, neither do I. What really happened at Area 51? What exactly is Article 50? Who's even in Level 42? I expect there are some things that we'll never know. Julian Assange has backed Trump up, and in these times of mistrust, it's good to know there's such a thing as brotherly solidarity amongst paranoid sex pests. Also this week, in response to alleged Russian interference in the US election, President Obama expelled 35 Russian diplomats. It was a sad sight, seeing them ushered out of their offices in high order before being placed inside each other. Blah, 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 blah. 2 points to Andy. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Angela have 4, and so too do Danny and Andy. We start round two with an online January offer from Hot UK Deals.
Gold or black Beats headphones were £169.99, now £179.99.
Our thanks to Keith Giles in Chislehurst for spotting that bargain. Jeremy, quite contrary, how does your garden grow?
14 times. There's going to be 14... garden villages of various sizes the government has announced It's not going to pay for them. It's not going to build them. It's just said, let it be so. And so various greenfield sites in the south of England will be made available for commuters to commute into towns in the southeast of England. I don't know why people use the term affordable housing as though that should be an exceptionable thing. You know, it's like, let's have a percentage of medicine which is healthy. But yeah, there's going to be all these new villages, and people are going to be happy in them, despite the fact that villages are the kind of places where the post office closes down just when it was finally being accepted.
Garden villages is what they're calling, aren't they? They're basically, it's more housing, but they want to make them sound a little bit more acceptable. But I think village sounds OK on its own. Village, I think, would be OK. But garden town, that doesn't sound good, does it? Town, does it? But, you know, you think, they called them garden ice cream villages. Everybody would want to live there.
Well, there's not a single one, I think, in the north-east at all.
That's because their countryside is beautiful. I mean, you have to hand it to the north of England. They have got the Peak District. They've got the Yorkshire Moors. We've got the South Downs, which are, you know, with a spirit level, you can tell they're hills, but otherwise...
So a lot of them are being built on greenbelt land, yeah, aren't they? Which apparently isn't land owned by people who are quite good at karate. Have you heard the names of them? There's one in Derbyshire that they're going to call the Infinity Garden Village. Right, that sounds like a euphemism for someone dying, doesn't it? Like, no, Grandma won't be visiting anymore. She's gone to the Infinity Garden Village.
Derbyshire is sort of the north, isn't it? I mean, it's not Shetland, but it's...
Northish.
North of here. That's for damn sure. Somewhere up there in the wilds of northernness. Simple but happy people. No bigger than your thumb. And very good with their hands, I'm told.
Infinity Garden Village is amazing, because basically, when you're in the Infinity Garden Village, you look out, and it looks like it's garden forever. That's what it is. It is to do with, you know, it's obviously all to do with the housing, aren't they? And they are building on these greenfield sites. And the thing is, people are complaining about them being greenfield sites. But when you actually go past, you see, like, fields, don't you, of corn, you feel fields of grass, and you see some other fields as you're going through the countryside, which have got solar panels in them. And you, for a moment, you think, well, that's amazing. The farmer's growing solar panels. And then you think, well, actually, if we've got a housing crisis, if we've got solar panels in a field, surely we can just have houses in a field with solar panels on the roof. I mean, we've got these eco-houses now where they grow grass on the roof. If we've got a housing crisis, surely what we do is we get houses in the field and then we just grow corn on the top of the bloody houses.
What's on the top, the solar panels or the corn? What's...
Well, we could grow corn on the top of some, put solar panels on the top of the others. I mean, it's not easy to get your tractor up there, but, you know... You see, they have to be close together, you know. You've got to think outside the box on this one.
Those panels in fields are only about a foot off the ground. You never fit a house under there. That's not going to work. It has to be luxury basement tower blocks.
We do need to think of some new solutions, don't we? Because at the moment, we've got a lot of young couples who can't afford housing, and we've got a lot of old people who are lonely living on their own. And you think, well, we have this theory of a granny flat. Surely what we need is a young couple flat in a granny house. That way, the granny gets companionship, and the young couple get a house and a granny.
I think it's a good idea, I think, building these new towns. I mean, after the huge success of Didcot and Basingstoke, this sort of thing was bound to happen, wasn't it?
Were garden villages designed... Were they like a Victorian ideal of utopian ideal? You know, I don't know how many people in Letchworth think they live in utopia.
Apparently on the news, they said it's really nice there, because it's got fountains and it's got grass. And, I mean, there was that whole... You know, the chocolate philanthropists... who started Bourne, building... Bourne, they built, yeah. Bourneville, they built...
Chocolate philanthropists are something rather different, Jeff.
They're never actually going to happen, are they? Because how much money have the government given for these? £6 million for 14 villages.
And three towns. Yeah.
Three towns get an extra £1.4 million in Hertfordshire and Buckinghamshire. £1.4 million. You're lucky if you can buy a five-bedroomed house, let alone three towns for £1.4 million. I mean, maybe I'm a bit like Sir Ivan. I'm being a bit pessimistic about this. We need to talk it up.
Deeply unpatriotic of you.
Yes, it's...
Why can't they just turn offices into flats? Because the cities...
Big windows, no privacy.
They could put...
You know, at home, you just
up.
Sort of wander around naked all the time. Well, you can't do that if you've sort of moved into an empty PricewaterhouseCoopers block or something like that.
Some blinds or something?
No,
you, or
no,
pants?
Not at this hour. No, we can't get blinds. No, just take everything off and see what happens. It'll be fine. Eventually, this is the news that 14 new garden villages are to be created, providing 48,000 new homes. This story is excellent news for new homeowners, or, as is more likely, one Saudi sheikh looking for gifts for his 14 sons. These villages have the opportunity to create their own traditions. Yes, we may have only existed for 18 months, but putting bells on our feet and blacking up is part of our cultural heritage. Well, I do like the way that you can make something awful seem more desirable by adding the word garden to it. Garden village, garden bridge, gardener's question time. Still, yet more brilliant places to visit if you, like me, adore driving somewhere your sat-nav doesn't recognise the postcode. What a rush. You feel quite the Columbus. 2 points to Jeremy. Angela, who's not been round?
Right, so this is Derby City Council. Now, in Derby City, there weren't any refuse collections over the whole of the Christmas and New Year period. So what the council have done, what they've said basically, is that any food waste that you have over Christmas, you should put in your freezer until they can come and collect it. Now, I don't know about you, we've got quite an efficient way of getting rid of food waste at Christmas in our house. It's called snacking. We don't have much waste. We are very conscious about, you know, I use every bit of the turkey at Christmas. You know, what we don't have at Christmas dinner, I make a curry, then I'll make a soup, and then I bury the carcass in the garden. Because I like the idea of a future archaeologist digging them all up one day and thinking that Bird of Matthews lived in my house.
I think it's reasonable advice that you should put your food waste in the freezer. It's better than what most of us do, which is to leave our rotting vegetation in the bottom of our fridge for years on end, isn't it? You only clear out the bottom of the fridge when you can no longer work out what things are.
But presumably it is just refuse collections, though. I mean, God forbid anyone, you know, in your family should pass away in Derby over Christmas. Like, put Grandma in next to the Calippos till we can pick her up next Wednesday.
Well, it works for serial killers, doesn't it? See why you're so grand. Yeah.
Well, we did try this advice, actually. We tried freezing the rubbish before throwing it out, but it didn't work because the foxes kept coming into the kitchen to use the microwave.
I just hope there's never a water shortage in Derby. You can see the slogan now, can't you? Don't flush it, freeze it.
But if there was one time, you know, they basically said they saved 100 grand, didn't they, by missing this one collection, that's what the council's justification was. But you think, if there was one time when people really wanted a collection for paper and food waste, it would be after you've done an awful lot of unwrapping and pigged yourself stupid.
Yeah, but you can gift wrap your leftover food waste and then leave it outside your house looking decorative. Vertically, these are the antics of Derby City Council, who advise residents whose bins were not collected for 3 weeks to start placing food waste in the freezer or give it to their children for a craft project. The fact that there is someone employed by Derby City Council to think up things to do with your rubbish suggests to me that austerity is not biting nearly hard enough. I think the people of Derby, and they are people... They should do what any conscientious citizen does, burn their rubbish in the back garden along with some tyres while singing Auld Lang Syne. Now, you'd be surprised at how many ways there are to get rid of rubbish. The other day, we discovered a handle attached to the toilet, which now we know what it does. Honestly, it's really freed up space in the bin. Absolute life-changer. We thought those pipes were decorative. 2 points to Angela. Andy, who's been asked to shelve their bad behaviour?
I think this is... There's a bookshop owner in Yorkshire, and he's the most miserable bookshop owner in the country, and the council have told him to be less miserable because he's had loads of spats with customers And he was basically accused of being incredibly rude. He tries to charge them 50p. He doesn't like people browsing in his bookshop and not buying anything. So his idea is if they start browsing, ask them for 50p, and then he'll refund it if they actually buy anything. Right? And he said, he's quoted as saying, he's not very rude to customers, he's low to medium rude. But yeah, it's like, it is a surprising idea, isn't it? This idea that you charge people to go round a second-hand bookshop. Because a second-hand bookshop is one of the few places where you've got no idea what's in there. You're going to have to browse to find... Yeah. If you were going round Quick Fit Fitter going, I'm just having a look, you know, it would be quite surprising, wouldn't it?
It's like a bookshop isn't a place, is it, for somebody with no... people skills. That's behind the reception desk at a GP practice.
I thought he was going to turn out to be a proper Yorkshire person, because Yorkshire people are famously buff. We're buff in Yorkshire. Speak me mind, don't take me long. But actually, he's not from Yorkshire at all. He's actually a Londoner who moved up there and took all of that anger with him. Years ago. Because actually, it's a myth about Yorkshire people being miserable, because actually Yorkshire people are ridiculously friendly, or overly familiar, as I prefer to call it. You could be on your way to a funeral and they'll say, oh, cheer up, you look like you're on your way to a bloody funeral.
they are famously quite short with you, aren't they, in Yorkshire? There is quite. I was in a restaurant in Yorkshire and they were really short with me when I asked for a clean knife and fork, you know. Won't go to that McDonald's again.
I mean, 50p is what you pay to go into a toilet in a train station, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I reckon if you pay 50p to go into a bookshop, you should be able to behave in exactly the same way.
Maybe that's why he objects. There's been too many people going and doing that.
Oh, why do people keep doing this in a social history section? This is
there is part of me that thinks, you know, in the age of internet shopping and Kindles, the fact he could be that rude to people and keep a business going, he should be given a Pride of Britain award.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because most shops go the other way. They try and accommodate you, don't they? I mean, I had a lovely experience in a shop recently. The lad on the till only had three items in a bit of a rush, and he was trying to, you know, scan it, and the first two scanned really nicely, and then he couldn't get the third one to scan the third item. And I thought, oh, he's going to call the supervisor, this is going to be a disaster, I'm going to be here forever. And to his credit, he tried to scan it one more time. It wouldn't scan. He just went, beep, himself, and he chucked it through. I thought that is the spirit that's going to keep this country going.
It's nice if someone has a bit of personality, isn't it, though? Do you know what I mean? Like, there should
yeah,
be
not too much, but a bit, I think.
No, but right. Designated places where people are allowed to have... You know, obviously he's got a slight personality problem, shall we say. It's better than perky people. You know, when you have to ring a call centre now, they say, so, how has your day been? You think, do you really want to know?
Those like cold callers, I have a problem with that, because you can probably hear, I always sound like I've got a cold. That's just my voice. I've got a croaky voice, just how I sound. And they'll always use it to try and get me on side. Right?
Is that why they're called cold callers?
Exactly. I've got a cold call once. I've just had enough. You know, she said, hello, is that Miss Barnes? I said, yes, speaking. She said, oh, Miss Barnes, you sound like you've got a terrible cold. I said, really? You sound like you've got a third in media studies from Luton. What do you mean?
Really rude, and yet you applaud her. if you're into a bookshop and some bloke said, get your filthy hands off my books, you slag, you think, what a terrible fellow.
I'd much rather give my money to that man than Amazon, because I bet he doesn't give all his money to Jeremy Clarkson.
And I bet if you buy a copy of Hamlet, he doesn't say, people who bought Hamlet also bought Macbeth.
Treacherously, this is the tale of a bookseller from the ambiguously named town of Hawes in North Yorkshire, who has been described as Britain's angriest shopkeeper after a series of run-ins with potential browsers. Parish councillors have discussed the shop five times since 2013, which is amazing considering they've yet to get round to the issue of the recent smallpox outbreak. Parish Council Chair John Blackie said the bookseller was offensive, which is saying something coming from a man apparently putting up with a racist name. The bookshop's actually doing rather well, considering that in most parts of Yorkshire, any attempt to record knowledge on paper is considered the work of Satan, and the perpetrator... and the perpetrator is promptly fired into Lancashire via trebuchet. 2 points to Andy. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Jeremy.
Niles, this was sent in by Simon Kinniston, who, this is what he heard on Radio 4's PM in a discussion about fashion. Every time I see a youth with jeans hanging off their backside, usually along with quite a lot of their underwear visible, I have the overwhelming urge to give them a quick tug.
Angela.
Well, I'm going to try here, Miles, something that I think might be a first for News Quiz. I'm going to try a foreign language newspaper. So this has been sent in from Kathy Radford and family, and it's an Austrian cutting. It's from the Tiroler Tageszeitung. Now, ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch, so we'll give it a go, right? I'm going to do this in German. See if you can understand what I'm saying. Selfie mit Krokodil endete nicht gut.
Danny.
Well, this is a flyer from Blackpool Council promoting volunteering sent in by Katie Upton, and it said, Leighton Cemetery needs you.
Andy.
I've got Ian Baird from the Isle of Portland in Dorset saw this in the Dorset Echo. It's about a forthcoming gig by famous blues singer Chris Farlow at the Tivoli Theatre in Wimborne. Theatre manager Charlie North Lewis said Chris Farlow was the first he ever booked for the Tivoli. He is a regular here, and it is always such a lovely night at the Tivoli, he never fails to disappoint. I'm playing the Tivoli soon on tour, so I'm looking forward to a new quote for the poster.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Danny and Andy have 7, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Angela with 8. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Augusta Margaret River Times sent in by Alan Hull in Western Australia.
A local man was fined on Monday for repeated trespassing and criminal damage. Margaret River Magistrates Court heard how the man entered a local school building by forcing open a window with another man.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Angela Barnes, Danny Finkelstein and Andy Parsons. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Caroline Nichols. The chair's script was written by Liam Byrne, James Tettle and Danielle Ward, with additional material by Susie Ruffle and Robin Morgan. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production.